Welcome to the June edition of the Greenpeace podcast, our monthly roundup of the green and the good. I'm your host, Jamie Woolley, and coming up...
I got rid of my private aeroplane. I've been up the blowing out. I don't need it.
Party time in the wilds of Middlesex, as thousands come together to provide the final word on a third runway.
You say you can do it better. You say you can clean up coal. Okay, well, here's a test. Now meet it. And they can't.
And we hear from head of the coal campaign at the Sierra Club about the future of the black stuff, stateside. But first, blink and you may have missed our campaign about Dove soap, palm oil and the ongoing devastation of the Indonesian rainforests. This wasn't because we didn't shout loud enough. Instead, we shouted so loud that just 10 days after we pushed the start button, Unilever, the company behind Dove, agreed to cooperate. And a large part of that was down to the thousands of emails and photos our supporters sent to senior executives. As the largest user of palm oil on the planet, Unilever is in the perfect position to help us put the brakes on an industry which is chewing up more and more of these rainforests every day, threatening the local people, the wildlife, and of course our climate. They're currently working with us to help build a coalition of companies which, once it reaches a critical mass, will hopefully be able to call at least a temporary halt to the deforestation while a permanent solution can be worked out. But while all this has been going on over here, what's been happening in Indonesia itself? To find out, I spoke to Hapsoro, forest campaigner for Greenpeace Southeast Asia. Hapsoro has seen for himself how palm oil plantations are eating into the rainforest, so I began by asking him what his own reactions were.
First time I was in the forest when I saw the deforestation, actually I'm quite shocked, because basically what we are consuming so far is actually related to the destruction of the forest. I'm talking about the palm oil product. And we never thought that before. Well, public never know, actually, that the product they consume daily is actually related to the massive destruction of the forest. And this is, for me, is quite shocking.
The focus of the campaign in the UK and Europe has been very much on Unilever, but what is the angle you've been concentrating on in Indonesia?
I can say that the campaign is quite successful in terms of moving forward the companies that using palm oil as their main sources, to become more responsible towards what they consume. But the things in Indonesia is not really make any difference with a successful campaign in Europe, unless if that campaign also can make difference in terms of company who supplies palm oil in Indonesia.
So companies like Unilever can have a real impact on the palm oil producers and traders in Southeast Asia.
They do have an impact now, but the impact itself is not as big as we want to have, because that's not enough. Only one company like Unilever is not enough for making a big difference, because what we need to have related to the deforestation in the forest in Indonesia is to have a big change to stop the ongoing forest destruction. We need to have a kind of like coalition of big companies, not only the consumer companies, but also the palm oil suppliers companies, to have the responsibility not to continue destroying the forest.
So even though we haven't got to the stage where we have a moratorium yet, have you seen any evidence that the expansion of palm oil industry is already being questioned?
In Indonesia, the expansion itself, it's been questioned maybe since the last 5 years. But critics from the public in Indonesia, only from Indonesia, is not enough to change the habit of companies who operate palm oil plantation.
What's next for your campaign in Indonesia over the next few months?
Learning from successful movement towards the industry in Europe, right now we are trying to also get the suppliers' companies to agree towards the similar moratorium call. So right now we are working to find more evidence and also trying to expose what will be happen if this type of bad practices still continue to be happen. And this is not only, and we want to show to the public that this is not only the responsibility of the consumer side, but also has to be the responsibilities from Indonesian side.
Sipson is a little English village which hasn't quite been gobbled up by the suburbs of West London and is so quiet you suspect it's probably still visited by a mobile library every Thursday morning. Quiet, that is, except for the planes leaving several times an hour from the international airport next door. For Sipson has the misfortune to sit in the exact spot where Heathrow's third runway will go if it gets the green light. Rather than lying down and waiting for the bulldozers to arrive, a few weeks ago the village hosted a carnival where residents were joined by climate activists in spelling out the word NO in giant letters on the local sports field. Tracy Frizzell slipped on her fairy wings and joined the party.
I've just come out of the Hatton Cross tube station and there's already several thousand people here. People already started marching,
runway. That's why we're here. Enough's enough.
Yeah, London can't take any more, and nor can the climate, and we will stop this happening.
So why did you come up today?
Oh, well, I think this is a really important component of the campaign to stop the runway. Because I was at the climate camp last year and I thought that was a terrific way to put it on the map and demonstrate the alternatives. And I believe in using the power of singing and dancing and music to change the world rather than black and white placards. So I've got my guitar and I'm going to sing a tune.
Richard Barnes is the deputy mayor and he's coming to speak with a message from Boris, so a special welcome.
Thank you, John. But thank you all so much indeed for coming today. Not only am I Deputy Mayor of London, but I also live in Hillingdon. And I've been fighting with many people here, expansion at Heathrow, for probably the best part of 20 years. They told us when they built Terminal 4 they didn't need a Terminal 5. And when they built Terminal 5 they told us they didn't need a third runway and a sixth terminal. Every time they lied to us. Their consultations have been fragments of their own imagination and lies, and they thought we'd go away.
Why are you hearing?
Well, at first I was a bit, you know, I didn't understand. You've got to imagine Amy as a one-celled creature, quite like an amoeba. And what I've realised is, I think there's something in all this, like climate change, not very good, too much carbon. What do you think? Am I talking to the converted?
I'm afraid you might be. Well, we're just coming into Sipson Village now at the tail end of the march. And we're coming into a big field where we have thousands of people that are going to make a giant human nose so that the planes flying overhead can see it.
Do we want climate change? No! Do we want to protect our local community? Yes! What are we saying to the third runway?
And I'm not going to buy Monge 2 from Kenya. I'm going to buy it from Norwich or closer.
Well done.
Thank you.
Amy Greenhouse there. No relation to Amy Winehouse, of course. And if you want to see her in the flesh, point your web browser to greenpeace.org.uk/podcasts and follow the links. Now, it's not just in the UK that coal is being described as fully compatible with cutting greenhouse gas emissions. Work that one out if you can. Over in the US, over 100 new coal-fired power stations are on the drawing board, and the tops of mountains are being chopped off to mine it. Fortunately, groups like the Sierra Club, one of the biggest environmental organisations in the States, are there alongside our own US office to provide a reality check. Bruce Niles, head of the Sierra Club's coal campaign, was in London recently, and James Turner went to meet him to discuss power of the electrical and political varieties.
I've come down to the headquarters of Christian Aid here on the south bank of the Thames in London to talk to Bruce Niles, who's the head of the coal campaign at the Sierra Club in the US. I'll be interviewing him in front of a busy market with a couple of urban wind turbines. So, apart from the terrible racket, this seems like the perfect spot for a chat about coal-fired power. And this man actually advised none other than Senator Barack Obama on energy issues just a few years back, so he definitely knows what he's talking about. But unfortunately, I didn't know exactly what the Sierra Club was, so I started off by asking him a little bit more about his organisation.
The Sierra Club is the largest and oldest environmental grassroots organisation in the United States. We've been around for about 116 years, working on protecting our public lands and clean air and clean water. I'm here in the UK to meet with folks who are working on global warming issues and who are facing similar threats to the United States in terms of the rush to build new coal-burning power plants and dramatically increase global warming pollution instead of trying to solve the problem.
What's the general picture with coal in the US? I mean, is it on the rise or are you winning the battle?
We've had some enormous success over the last 2 years as the public has really tuned into the threat posed by these new coal plants, and the price of new coal plants has been skyrocketing as the price of the clean available alternatives, primarily wind and solar power, have been coming down.
Do you think we're entering a new era when it comes to global warming in the United States? I mean, we'll have a new president by the beginning of next year. Are you optimistic that change is on the way?
We're going to see enormous change come November when the new president gets sworn in January. Whoever that will be significantly better. And all the three existing candidates have said they're going to work on strong global warming regulation as soon as they get into office. There is a grassroots awareness that our energy future is dependent on us doing something better than we did in the past. That in the past, it was okay to rely on oil and coal for our energy sources. Those days are over. And whether it's for environmental reasons, to solving the global warming crisis, or doing something about our over-reliance on coal and oil from other places, it's time to get to clean energy now.
Now, one of the things I think that Arnold Schwarzenegger was fairly instrumental in was introducing a standard for greenhouse gas emissions per plant. Can you just explain a little bit more about how that works?
What they did was enact the strongest global warming regulation anywhere in the country so far, and a key piece of that legislation was to make sure that they weren't importing power from other states from coal-burning power plants. It basically sets the level at the level of emissions that come from natural gas or something cleaner, and basically throws the test down to, or throws the gauntlet down for the coal industry, saying, you say you can do it better, you say you can clean up coal, okay, well, here's a test, is an objective test, now meet it. And they can't. They consistently have refused to meet that standard.
Now, as I mentioned, I mean, it was a Republican governor who was instrumental to some extent in bringing that in, and a number of other environmental measures. Do you think that global warming is moving beyond partisan politics a little bit more in the U.S.?
Absolutely. We're seeing Republicans and Democrats across the country who are speaking out on global warming. Two of the best states so far, California and Florida, headed up by Republican governors. And then in the heartland, a lot of Democrats. So it's a real mix of Democrats and Republicans who are saying, let's get beyond partisan politics and solve this problem.
There's a proposal for a new coal-fired power station at Kings North in Kent. What kind of lessons do you think the US can teach us about stopping that coal plant being built?
We've really done a lot of work in the United States to highlight to our political leaders that in a world where we're trying to solve the problem of global warming, the last thing you want to do is to make that problem worse and to dig the hole deeper by building new coal-burning power plants. And if the UK is going to move forward, as states in the US are doing, and hopefully the country will come January, it needs to say no new coal-burning power plants.
That's it, there is no more. For more on the topics and people mentioned in this edition, go to greenpeace.org.uk/podcasts and send any bouquets or brickbats to webteam@uk.greenpeace.org. Join us next time for what will almost certainly be a Glastonbury special, but no promises, mind. Studio production was by nailing several egg boxes to the walls of an empty meeting room, and the editor was, me. Goodbye.